Bold. Brave. With Dr. Pam Peek.
Hi, I'm Dr. Pam Peek, and this is episode 524 of the Bold and the Brave Her podcast. Today, I'm joined by Dr. Natalia Petrozella. Oh, I said it right, Natalia. Oh my gosh.
Nice work.
I know. We're talking about a fit nation, the gains and pains of America's exercise obsession. That's the name of her book. Oh my gosh. This is numero two of having her on the Her podcast, because I can't get enough of this thing in a big way. And just when I said that to myself, this wonderful scholar is featured in a fabulous Wall Street Journal piece, which you'll hear about in just a second. But first, who is she? I bet many of you know who she is. She's a historian of contemporary American politics and culture and the author of Classroom Wars, Language, Sex, and the Making of Modern Political Culture, in addition to Fit Nation, The Gains and Pains of America's Exercise Obsession. Oh my gosh. And she is with The New School. The New School. All right. So Natalia, welcome back to the Her podcast.
I'm so glad to be back. Thanks for having me.
All right. So here's the gig. All right. The name of the article that caught my eye in the Wall Street Journal was, "Want a better relationship with your teen children? Exercise with them." Where in the heck did that come from?
All right. Well, I cannot take credit for the headlines because I don't write them, but I'm so glad it caught your eye. I did write the article, and that is me and my kids in the pictures. It came from the fact, so I'm a mom of two teen children, young teens, 13 and 15. And I think like most parents, that's not the easiest time to get along with your children. And something that I realized very naturally is that there's one place where we never fight, even like each other, have a good time. And that's when we're doing some kind of movement and exercise together. And that, I mean, really broadly, like it could be my husband's a big swimmer. The rest of us don't love swimming, but he's like, let's sign up for a family open water swim. We did it. It was awesome. My son, I say, let's go to the gym and, you know, we can lift together. We have a great time. My daughter and I go for a jog. And I just realized that's like, we talk so much about youth sports. There's so much writing about the fitness industry, a lot of which I do. And this felt like this like literal sweet spot that it doesn't get enough attention. So I pitched the story and the Wall Street Journal wanted to go with it. And it seems to have really struck a nerve. I've gotten so, and in a good way, I've gotten so many wonderful messages.
Like what kind of messages did you get out of this thing? Which I think is really so cool. There's a picture of you with your two beautiful children and you're all wearing swimsuits. You appear to be at the beach, I guess. And you've got those red little swim caps. You all are kind of squeezed together in a little lineup and you just look like you're having a ball. So what kind of comments did you get from this?
Yeah. So I'll get back to that picture in a second, which is really funny in our family. So I've just gotten a ton of just very earnest messages from people who say either like, my favorite thing is going to the gym with my kids or going skiing with them. Or I remember when my dad used to take me for these early morning runs and this was so special. And like, that was really, it's just nice to hear about that. And a lot of them exercise activities like I have no interest in, have never done, like cross-country skiing, like backcountry hiking, but it all kind of gets to that same core experience of having quality multi-generational time while you're moving away from technology. And I just think we need more of that. And to me, it's funny, you mentioned my first book, Classroom Wars. I write a lot about like politics and kind of like tension and polarization and all this. We have so much of that in our culture that it feels like this absolute treasure to find something that kind of crosses divides. Like I always say, no matter what you think about who's in the White House or all these controversial issues, we all kind of agree exercise is good for you and that we probably should be doing more of it. We all kind of also agree we'd like to spend more and kind of more quality time with our families. And this issue to me kind of hit that note. And so yeah, people have been sharing a lot of stuff like that. I'll also say one, like the only real kind of criticism that I got, which I don't even think is really criticism, if some people said, well, it doesn't have to be exercise. This is really just about any quality time you have with your children. I get that. And I think that's true. And I do, I can reread the piece and be like, oh, maybe I'm a little annoying. Be like, everybody just go for a jog. Cause like lots of people hate that, teens, adults. But I do think, I do want to push back a little bit on that criticism because I think there's something special about physical movement. I think there's something special about doing an activity that like makes you be present in your body in like real life that also like gets those endorphins pumping. And then something that I highlighted in the article, which is very meaningful to me, and I heard from a lot of people who enjoyed this angle as well, is that there's something about the multi-generational movement aspect, which is not built into other aspects of our culture. Like kids play sports in very age-segregated ways. Grown-ups go to the gym, often in gyms that are too expensive for kids or that are like, do I have age requirements? Or it's just not really a family space. And so there's something so great for me. The example that I used is like, go to the gym with my son and like, he can now bench press like twice what I bench press. So there's that like power of youth, but he also like doesn't know anything about something. So he's like, mom, look, what's that? I'm like, that is a weighted sled. Let me show you how to use it. And so there's this like both ways, multidimensional teaching and learning that I think goes on in this embodied practice, which is special to movement and exercise. And I think we should celebrate that.
And also there's the word play, you know?
Yeah.
And sometimes I don't even use the E word, exercise, because people break out into a cold sweat and run the opposite direction. Instead, I just say, hey, let's just sort of get together and play. And then, you know, it's basically bait and switch. So you say it's play, and next thing you know, you're kind of bounding down the beach, having a lot of fun. And you don't call it jogging. You're like, hey, you know, this is so much fun. You know, it's like that Mark Twain thing. I'm having so much fun painting these fences, you know, and there you have it. Let's pivot to your daughter for a minute. You wrote something that I just love. It's like one of my favorite paragraphs in this article. Exercising with my daughter, I see what Gloria Steinem meant when she wrote in 1982 about the, and I quote, instant sisterhood forged in women's lockers, a rare environment in which semi-nude women were everywhere and not for male consumption. The sight of women unashamed of C-section scars or cellulite, caring for their bodies by building strength can be revelatory. Tell me what was going on in your head when you wrote that.
Okay, so that Gloria Steinem essay, it's called In Praise of Women's Bodies. It's not very long. It came out in Ms. Magazine. And it really, when I read it, I didn't read it. And it's, I was like four when it came out. But I read it, you know, some years later. And it really struck me because she was writing right when like women's aerobics classes and women's gyms were getting really popular. And she talked about this new experience of she'd gone to, I think, a dance aerobics class. And she was in the locker room. And it was decisively not like a beauty salon. And it also wasn't a sports locker room, which like was sort of unappealing to a lot of women. And she was like, there we were, all of these women of different ages, mothers, daughters. And we were like unembarrassed that we had cellulite, C-sections, and like there are nude women everywhere in our culture, but they're usually suggestively posed, trying to look sexy, presumably for men. And she's realized that this women's locker room at the gym was a place where that wasn't why women were naked. They were there to get changed and to get strong and to like maybe do a little bonding. And I think today, that was 1982, long before Instagram. And today, one of the things that I think is so powerful about a mother and a daughter or a mother and a son or a father and a son or just these kind of in real life, multi-generational embodied experiences is that, you know, there is fitness content all over social media, but so much of it is so produced and filtered and all about aesthetics rather than performance or just about anything other than how you look. And so I think that when you exercise or move, let's just say, or play with people who are are not like perfectly filtered or 22 years old, or they're mostly for what they look like, you really gain a new appreciation for what your body can do and what other bodies can do. And so I like that a lot. Like I like to be with, I really find it valuable, really for my daughter and son, but I don't hang out in men's locker rooms. So, you know, but I like with my daughter, I notice it in particular because I see what her TikTok feeds look like. Yeah, it's fitness content, but so much of it is about the mirror and all of that. And it's all these very young, sort of unattainable bodies. And I just think when she sees, hey, mom is still at it. She's had two kids. And, you know, it's like, I'm not doing it for the six pack at this age, which I don't even know if I could have at this point. But I think that there's something really, really great to that. It reminds you that a reason to be physically active is not just for the aesthetics or the selfie. It's actually to build community and strength and skill and have fun.
What role has physical fitness played in your life?
Okay, so this is funny because now I'm such an exercise proselytizer, but I often joke that I have adult onset athleticism because when I was growing up, I was terrified and really intimidated and humiliated by the physical activity options that were there for me, which were basically PE and organized sports. I wasn't good at it. I felt clumsy. That presidential fitness test, I was last at everything. I just felt like I'm about the books and the body, like tough on me. I just don't want to engage with that. And so what happened to me actually is that my junior year of high school, this is like 1994, I realized that you could do an independent study in phys ed. And I was like, anything to get me out of this humiliation. And the head of the PE department was like, we've never had anyone asked to do that. I'm like, it's in the manual, like figure it out. This is my right. And so what they said is you can do a supervised activity. Can't be a sport. I'm like, don't worry, but you could get a personal trainer or you could do a group fitness class. I went to my parents and they were like, personal training's for rich people. We're not doing that. But we belonged to a Jewish community center and they had group fitness classes included. So I didn't even know what I was signing up for, but it was going to be better than phys ed. And I went to a step aerobics class. And it was a little awkward at first. I remember thinking everyone was so old. Meanwhile, they were probably like 32. And I remember like—
But that is old.
Oh, very old, very old. It was really awkward at first, but I had to keep going to get the course credit. And before long, I loved it. And I was like, oh my gosh, moving to music and getting strong and, you know, meeting these like random people that I would never meet outside of here. Like, this is amazing. And so that really kicked off this very important kind of era in my life, which I think I'm still in, where I realized that I'm just better at everything I do and happier when I am physically active. And so it started with step aerobics. I became certified as an instructor of another wonderful mind-body program. I started running marathons. Now I've been doing HYROXes. But to me, like, it's just, I feel like I discovered it relatively late, but I just feel like movement is a privilege. And I'm just excited and grateful to have a body where I can explore these different things and have these experiences and not be great at any of them, honestly. Like, I'm a pretty mediocre everything athlete, but it doesn't mean I'm not always trying to get better for myself and now with my family.
I just love that. You reminded me of something, and that is when I transitioned from marathon, because honestly, between you and me and the zillion
and
people
the
out there listening,
yeah,
I know. I never liked running. I'm a sprinter. If you saw my body, you'd understand. I'm just a muscular tall person.
Yeah.
But I don't know. It's like you don't get a whole lot of medals, you know, on weekends for sprinting. So I thought, okay, I'll join it.
And everyone was doing it, right? Marathons.
I know. And
right?
Everyone's doing 5Ks and they're doing 10Ks and half marathons. So I thought, oh, hell. So I started doing marathon and I kind of was grinding my teeth through the last half marathon of each one going, just remind yourself, you paid to do this to yourself. And but then there's this handsome young man at the Marine Corps marathon with a buzz cut who gives you that medal. And you're like, oh, this was worth it. But then that shined more off after a while. But, you know, when I converted to triathlon, part of it is just I must have ADD or something. It's sort of like I could just die of boredom out here. We have just hit half marathon. Shoot me now. Because I have to repeat this again. What?
Oh my
repeat
gosh.
It? I have another. Anyway, So someone once said the definition of a triathlete is someone who's quite athletic, but not good at any of those three sports. Okay, so in other words, you're not going to be the fastest swimmer. You're not going to be the fastest cyclist. You're not going to be the fastest runner, but you slap all three of them together. Good freaking luck. Okay.
That takes now, a lot, though. My husband does triathlons. It's so
hard. That's the whole point.
Yeah.
But that's the whole point. It's sort of like, you know, you got to grow a set out there. And, you know, I definitely grew some hair on my chest, whether I liked it or not, when I was out there in the middle of nowhere
swimming.
You masked
it well.
Yeah. It's sort of like, yeah, I'm good. So there you have it. Now, tell us why you wrote Fit Nation, because Fit Nation had a lot of interesting stuff in it. What was the inspiration for writing this book? And everyone out there, this came out in 2023 when I had Natalia on the podcast. And I just keep coming back to it because it's so rich. It's got like a lot of stuff in it. So frankly, the Wall Street Journal article was just another excuse to have her come back because she is a repeat offender on the her podcast. But you wrote Fit Nation, The Gains and Pains of America's Exercise Obsession. What was going on with that?
Yeah, so I'm a historian, as you mentioned in my intro, but might not be apparent in our conversation so far. But really, I mean, that is my job. I look around at the world we live in and I ask, how did we get here? And then I try to find the path to how we got here. And Fit Nation is very much a product of that worldview. I mean, to be very specific about it, as I mentioned, like I thought all movement and exercise was organized sports until I like ended up in that step class. And so one kind of aspect that animated me to write this book, which is very much a history of fitness culture, not sports in America, and I explained like how those are different and how they're related, was that I'm like, wait, fitness is different than sports. Like some of the activities are the same, but it's different. And then when I started to look at the data that exists, I'm like, and actually, if you think about it, fitness in terms of participation actually kind of affects and engages more Americans than organized sports. Like there are tons and tons of sports spectators. Lots of little kids play sports, many more, especially girls, than, you know, 40, 50 years ago. But like everyone is expected to do some kind of movement for their health. And yet we didn't have a real legible history of how that expectation came to be. So that was one kind of, that's like the historian in me wanting to understand that. The answers to that were just fascinating. I mean, like I said, now it's just accepted. Exercise is good for you. We should move more. For most of American history, like I would say until the 70s, but even people in the 80s are saying this, people thought like vigorous exercise is actually dangerous. Like slow down, don't lift anything too heavy, don't run too fast. Like it is bad for you in many different ways. And so I chart that change and I explain those attitudes. There are a few, you know, like any big creative project, there are always aha moments. One big aha moment for me in starting this project was I was at some conference in Los Angeles and, you know, being such a New Yorker, I like, it was MapQuest, I think at the time, not even like Google Maps. I'm like, oh, I need to go somewhere a mile away. I'm sure I can just walk there. Meanwhile, I end up like under an overpass because like no one walks anywhere there. But I remember looking up from this underpass and seeing that there was this big gym and it was all illuminated and there were probably like 40 treadmills in a row and all these people were running there looking totally miserable. It was like 7 o'clock at night. And I was like, wow, some alien from another like society or world would look at us and be like, what the heck is going on here? Those people are paying money to use all their energy by themselves after work and they look miserable. What is that about? And so I wanted to understand what that was about. And so part of it, like I said, is this intellectual history of like, how did we come to arrive at this consensus that exercise is good for you and everyone should do it? And then another piece of it is, and why do so few people actually exercise when we all know it's good for us? So there's that piece too. And then there's also a kind of like culture and business history. Where did all these gyms come from? Where did this big industry come from? Why isn't this a public good? So yeah, those are the kind of questions that excite me as a historian and somebody who's just like, you know, a mover and a consumer and a participant in this world too.
All right. Now, when we come back, I'm going to ask you about some of the real surprises you discovered when you were writing Fit Nation. The Her podcast is sponsored by Solaray Vitamins, Minerals, and Herbs, all rooted in nature. In addition to women's multivitamins, Solaray, S-O-L-A-R-A-Y, is presenting the new Her Life Stages products, providing support for the menstrual years, including PMS, perimenopause, menopause, and postmenopause, and even libido. This integrative holistic approach has a woman's back throughout her entire life journey. To learn more about Her Life Stages, you've got options. You can run on over to your local health food store or check it out at Whole Foods, Sprouts, Amazon, or scroll over to Solaray.com and use promo code HER20 for 20% off your purchase. Women, Solaray's got your back. And we're back. All right. So when I read through your book, Fit Nation, it was eye-popping. There were some statistics in there that kind of opened my eyes to the reality of what physical activity actually now means today, given all the expensive gyms and the athleisure wear that we spend God knows how much money on, that we've got, everyone is walking around there, Lululemon, and there's like a whole thing going on. What happened with just going to a boys' club and girls' club and having all the girls and boys having fun and back and forth? And then you have recesses, school activities decreasing more and more and more. It just seems like we're going in 28 different directions here. So tell us all what this is all about. You know, let's wrap our heads around what's going on with physical fitness / exercise in America today.
Okay, great way to frame that. So let me just sketch out two major ideas that I think help to answer and kind of unify those 28 different directions. So one big thing that happens is that physical exercise goes from being considered something that is very narrowly physical to being something that enhances your holistic health, mind, body, mental health, when we start to talk about that. So that's a big story that I tell here. Because when exercise is considered as something only for your physical body, it's actually considered kind of like sleazy, narcissistic, a waste of time, that it even operates to like take away from your cerebral energy and your mental energy. So there are these early enthusiasts for exercise, like in the 1890s, early 1900s, 1920s, and they are constantly saying like, oh, no, we are not strong like some dumb brute laborer who works with his hands. This is about self-discipline and like cultivated training. There's this one guy I write about who says, I am not a mere breaker of stones, right? And so they really have to distinguish kind of smart, civilized physical training from just these like louts who like use their bodies because their brains are insufficient.
Physical labor.
Physical laborers. So that's like a class distinction, right? So that exists early on. Like physical work is like low class. Who wants to do that? The other big assumption, especially for men, although it operates a little differently for women, the other big assumption is that men who care too much about working on their bodies are like suspiciously feminine. Like that's ladies stuff. Like guys, like not if you're playing football, organized sports is different because that's competitive and sort of acceptable. But if you're a man who's working on building muscles, who's spending all your time on your physique, there must be something wrong with you. And so there was also a lot of like very over the top, like I am straight, I am masculine. Having muscles is masculine, which is so funny because today having muscles is considered normatively masculine and working on your body is too. But that took a lot of time to get there. So there's this big shift that happens like kind of in the middle of the 20th century, I would say, where physical exercise becomes much more connected to being a good American, to being emotionally healthy, to being personally responsible. And there are a few reasons that happens. A big one, though, I would say is the Eisenhower-Kennedy years and the fact that they promote exercise as part of being a good American.
Oh, so yeah. We had the President's Physical Fitness Challenge. Oh, yeah.
Oh, actually.
And you had to pass it.
So we're talking now, I'm in Boston, and tonight I'm giving a talk at the JFK Library about exactly this. And I think this really transformed ideas about fitness. And then that kind of is off to the races, that idea that like to be a fully actualized self, you have to be physically active. And something that happens in the 70s, I would say, but like onward from there too, is that that idea really takes hold across the political spectrum in very different ways. And I always use running as an example because it's so vivid. For running, you both have like, oh, you know, this is 70s, so it's counterculture and all of that. And you have all of these like hippies who are like, oh, this is about connecting to the land and the natural high and about resisting a car-centric culture, connecting to nature. And it totally fits in with that, right? Then you also have all of these like very sort of disciplinarian conservatives, including Kenneth Cooper, who's the doctor behind really the science of cardio and who is a huge jogging advocate. And he's like, you want to resist this permissive hippie culture? You need the discipline of a daily jog. You need to get out there, stop doing what feels good in the moment and commit to hard work. And you really see, it makes sense, right? Both of those things. And so you see physical exercise running most vividly, kind of appealing across an increasingly polarized political environment. Okay, so that's like one big thing that happens. The other thing, and you alluded to this when you talked about like what's happening or not happening in schools, the kind of failed promise of the Kennedy years, I think, is that so much of that promotion, which of course came from the federal government, was about public investment in physical fitness and recreation. The most notable example was PE classes, but also Kennedy and Eisenhower, and really every president since, although not as energetically, has said, this is important, schools should have this, et cetera. But they never really put the money behind it. Like even Kennedy, who was the most vocal one, it was really like a PR campaign. Go lobby your local district to spend money on this. It wasn't like, here's a huge federal outlay for this. So what ended up happening, we had this private industry, which kind of capitalized on all this new enthusiasm for exercise as personal health activity, to show that you are affluent and you can afford that kind of leisure, to show you care about your health. And you have essentially the fitness industry take off and the public sector basically gets left behind. And so that's my general explanation for why we all agree exercise is good for you. That's partly thanks to these federal campaigns, but we never got the buy-in to public infrastructure to help us make that a reality. Instead, we get a pay-to-play fitness industry, which is, I would say, increasingly accessible because there's, you know, more and more inexpensive things, but it's still very inaccessible for a range of reasons for a lot of Americans.
And a lot of those Americans, as you say, it's not a priority. They're just trying to get through day by day.
Yeah.
And the very thought of, you know, spending a little time on yourself, especially a woman, women will defer to anyone else's needs and requirements and blow off their own. Most of them are holding down the entire household with a job and the kids and making certain there's food on the table and back and forth, in oftentimes very tough circumstances, which is why, you know, I've always been, you know, a real advocate for community centers where kids can go and park themselves and hopefully be able to have an excellent experience. You know, we have a lot of major league celebrity level athletes who started at community centers.
Yeah.
You know,
totally.
Shooting hoop and doing whatever. And I'll go with that. The trouble is they're not ubiquitous.
Right.
And they do take politics. They do take local money, blah, blah, and all the rest of it. And it breaks my heart because, you know, you said earlier on, you were pointing to your head. You said, you know, this is a heck of a lot more than just taking care of your body.
Right.
Because this is a huge mental, physical fitness play. It's all interconnected. The amount of research coming out on this, you know, I'm on the board of the American College of Sports Medicine. So we generate a lot of the research in this field. And what we've been able to show is that, boy, I'll tell you, you don't want to have a little mood modulator? Take a walk. We could show the science behind this. Like, how does that happen? So it's kind of, it's a beautiful interconnected system. So what you're doing is you feel better, you're able to get out there and take better care of yourself. At the same time, when you're feeling down, go out again and leave yourself, you know, just get out of yourself and go to that place. And it's so terribly important. Where are we today, right? It's 2025. Where are we now with this whole issue of physical activity? I'm looking at a demographic in the United States, right, where over 40% of American adults are obese, that the majority of adults in America are overweight, and that's been the same for a number of years. It's just that the overweight and the obese situation has transitioned big time. Now we have obesity running amok, and I call it diabesity because of the association with type 2 diabetes. And people are at least 50 to 100 pounds over some kind of normative metric. And now where do we go? Because I think when you talk about the issue of physical activity, movement, exercise to someone who is, you know, 15 to 20 pounds, you know, over their norm, whatever that is, that's one conversation. But what if you're 75 to 100 pounds over? What does that conversation look like?
Right. Well, you're the medical doctor, so I think you have probably more authority than I do on this for sure. But I do think I'm optimistic that we've come to a much better place as a culture in sort of acknowledging exactly what you're talking about, how important exercise is, even in small amounts, even a walk around the block across the board, and not just for weight loss, and not just certainly for aesthetic reasons. It changes your mood. I mean, there's so much research. People say, where do I start? And I'm like, there's research that shows an 11-minute walk a day has, you're not going to lose 100 pounds like that, right? But it is certainly going to boost your mood and perhaps give you motivation to change other aspects of your life. And so I think no opportunity is too small for exercise is a great place to start. I think that's particularly encouraging if you are not in a body where exercise feels natural or accessible. So there's that. The other thing we haven't even touched on the issue a lot of people want to touch on these days, which is drugs like Ozempic, Mounjaro, and what that's doing to this conversation. And that's probably a whole other episode. But I think one thing that's interesting is that as this is becoming a way that people are losing weight, you know, very rapidly, it is becoming clear how important exercise actually is to continue to build bone density, muscle mass, and for reasons other than losing weight. I've always thought that marketing exercise as a weight loss tactic, even though that's the way it's mostly marketed, is a very losing proposition. You really can't exercise yourself out of the standard American diet if what you're doing is looking to lose weight. I mean,
you can't outrun your fork.
100%, especially if your fork is lifting the most economically, you know, accessible foods, which are highly caloric, hyper palatable, addictive, and processed. I mean, don't get me started on this. But the fitness industry has been saying that, oh, just get your motivation and like join the gym and you'll have your dream body. Sorry, there's a lot more at play here. And so what I do hope happens, as so many people are going to be losing weight, and I've started to on these drugs, is that maybe we can connect to kind of the things that exercise really can do for you, which are tremendous in terms of mental health, social health, bone density, longevity. I mean, you name it. And so that to me would be, that's a very positive part, I think, of where we are right now. And so I'm hoping we'll see that shift or continue to see it even more.
Well, you know, once the research was really thoroughly analyzed, the way it really works is if you want to drop excess body fat, it's done through nutrition, period, end of story. You know, the biggest joke was, I remember when I started running back when dinosaurs ruled the earth, that, you know, here I am out there doing my thing. And, you know, when you're done with your run, you're like, damn, I could eat a horse here, you know. So then you do, and then, you know, you're saying, well, this is ridiculous. I'm up 5 pounds, but I'm a runner. So how did that happen? That's because we didn't think, did we now? This is about nutrition. You have to be doing a balancing act here, and you can't just, this isn't a free ticket to be able to eat everything you wanted to just because you ran 6 miles. Whoopee-doo. At the end of the day, the way it works is that nutrition is really what you need to focus on to be able to drop excess body fat, number one. What does physical activity do? Well, one of the first things it does is it helps enhance your cardiometabolic foundation for your body, for your health. So that's very important. It's great for your heart and all the rest of it. Ken Cooper's one of my dearest friends. He was one of the very first people to teach me this way back when. So we got that. But what else does it do? What it also does is it puts a period at the end of the sentence for enhancing body composition. You've gone ahead and dropped that excess body fat and stuff, but to make all of that sustainable, because in my view, you define success here as something that is healthfully sustainable. And physical activity is what seals the deal. It seals the deal. And that's what you want to be able to do. So they work in tandem. But to your point, I think for a long time, that was just false advertising about physical activity. You just go in there and, you know, like, how many people, raise your hand out there on the Her podcast land. All right, you go into a gym, you know, some random gym, whatever, and you're a member. And week after week after week after week, you see somebody who is either obese or overweight, and they're just like crunching it. I mean, they're like lifting the weights and they're on the treadmill, elliptical, whatever, and they never change. They always look, and you're like, you're mystified. I'm like, what are you doing when you get home from the gym? What are you eating all day long that's neutralizing the effects of all this nice physical activity? And I remember saying that to myself for years and years when I was going to the gym in a big way. I have my own gym now, so I don't trust that we're not going to have another pandemic or something. So we built our own, but cool, just to be safe. Yeah. But there it is. Yeah, your point is extremely well taken, needless to say. So right now, what role, you know, as we're kind of putting a period at the end of this whole thing, I could talk to you forever. Oh my gosh.
Likewise. This is just, I'm like, can we take this offline?
Totally. Let's do it.
Love that.
You know, what can you offer as wisdom and advice to women who are listening in right now, watching us, who say, what role should physical activity play in my life?
Okay, I'm so happy you asked that, because one thing that I think is really insidious about the current fitness culture, particularly around women, is that because there's so much that's like has a lot of bells and whistles and is fancy and is, you know, marketed as leisure, the problem with that is that it can be understood to be something that's nice if you have time for it or something that's a treat for you. And of course, it is a privilege to be able to take an hour out of your day or half an hour or whatever time it is to exercise. But the idea that this is some kind of like privileged activity, like buying a handbag or going out to drinks or something like that, is dead wrong. We should be thinking about exercise as a human right that everybody needs and that everybody deserves, not as some privilege of the well-off when you can afford it or that's nice to have. And I think that that's something, particularly to women, it's often presented that exercise is like this frivolous, silly thing that's like, oh, because you want to look pretty. And there's something to that. And there's nothing wrong with having that, or there's nothing wrong with having fun exercising. But I think we have to resist the idea that this is a kind of privileged leisure activity, a frill, and instead remind each other and ourselves, this is important for my health, for my well-being, for my community, and for my ability to show up fully for the people I love and for myself. And that can often get lost in our dominant culture.
Those are just fabulous words. We're now at a point in our society where physical activity, just activity, hello, I didn't even use the E word, physical activity is absolutely foundational to our health span, the years that we're going to have spent in a robust lifestyle where we can do things we love to do. That's what we want. All right, how are you going to be able to modulate your mood feel balanced, be connected with nature, get out, O-U-T. And honestly, how can you get through the day? I mean, even when I'm traveling and I'm giving, you know, I'm teaching and I'm out there, wherever I am, I always look around and go, okay, where can I walk? Is there a little park around here where I'm not going to get killed? and all the rest of it. Do you know what I mean? It's 100%. Integral. You know, so what I do is I make my life activity-centric. Okay, activity-centric. Now, I'm kept honest by wearing my Aura ring. And no, I don't have anything to do with the company. But if your Aura out there, hello, ambassador. Anyway, so here's the gig. I mean, it literally will tell me, is it time to stretch your legs? That's the polite way of saying, get off your ass. You've been sitting too long and do something for God's sake. Okay. I love it. And then I'm able to kind of also accrue activities throughout the day that I could input into the Aura device, et cetera. And at the end of the day, I have like this sense of achievement. Like, look at this. We did the elliptical. We lifted some weights and, you know, we did this, we did that. And everything's all added up. And I said, wow, I was physically active today. It felt wonderful. I'm going to have great sleep. And this is all helping my stress levels, blah, blah, blah. Get it?
So you, yes, I totally get it. And we are like on the same page completely. Something that you said, I also really want to highlight, which is I am like you. I try to make my days activity centric. When I'm traveling, if I know I'm sitting for a long time, I'm like, can I get in a walk first thing in the morning? Now, of course, you and I, it sounds like, have relative control over our schedules. Lots of people, it's like, show up at this shift, and I don't care if you live an hour and a half away and you have to drop off your kids somewhere else, and there's a lot less flexibility. So that brings me to something else you said, which is, you know, I look for a park where I might not get killed. And I think what we have to do is make it easier for more people to make those choices, to make their days activity-centric. And a lot of that doesn't have to do with personal motivation or organization. It has to do with, wow, is there a park nearby my house that's well lit where I can know I can safely go, or I can have my kid playing in the middle while I do a couple laps? And unfortunately, that stuff is much harder to come by than it should be. And so I think like another message I hope your listeners take with you is that like something else that drives me crazy about the fitness industry is that so much of the messaging is about personal motivation and like, if you're motivated, you can do this. And of course, we need that. If whoever you are, it's easiest to just sit on the couch. So you need personal motivation. But we often forget how much the context that we exist in structures how we can put that motivation into action. It is just easier for me to say that I'll go out and take that walk if there's a park nearby, or I can call a babysitter, or I have $25 of extra income to book the yoga class. Like, it's just easier. I'd like to make those choices more accessible and easier for more people to have.
All right. How can people learn more about your work, your books? What's the website? What's the gig?
Got it. So my website's nataliapetrozella.com. I am at Instagram at Natalia Petrozella. I'm on all the other social media sites too. Not all of them, but LinkedIn and X and Blue Sky, but I don't use them as much. And there's my book right there. The purple one.
Okay, hold it up. Hold it up.
Yep.
Hold it up. There's Fit Nation. There she is.
The hardcover, but you can get it in paperback. I also read the audiobook. And yeah, so stay in touch with me. I would love to be connected.
It's great to have someone of your background. You got your PhD from Stanford University, your BA from Columbia, and you're a historian. And I love the fact that you gave that the historian's touch. So everyone, the name of the book is Fit Nation, The Gains and Pains of America's Exercise Obsession. And we've been talking to Dr. Natalia Petrozella. There she is. Oh, thank you so much, being on the Her podcast, because it's been a gas. And needless to say, we're going to tap you again.
Oh my gosh, third time's a charm. Maybe we'll meet in person one of these days.
I'm just saying, you know.
I would love that.
Oh my gosh. Thank you, Natalia. And I want to also thank my sponsor, Solaray Vitamins, Minerals, and Herbs Rooted in Nature, and the new Her Life Stages products. Scope it all out at solaray.com. And now take a moment, leave us a review because we love to hear from you. Oh my God, that rhymes. Okay, this has been a production of Podcast Health. And remember, your time in this world may be limited, but the things you can do with that time are not. So get on out there, enjoy it, seize the day, play, exercise, do something. Enjoy yourself. All right. Thanks, everyone, for listening.